Hey guys, you're listening to Snacks and Chats. It's actually a pretty serious podcast that just has a silly name. We basically interview a bunch of creative, interesting people, and generally we begin the interview with the question, when people ask you where you're from, what do you tell them? And that's because I find that what people's answer to that question is generally says a lot about their life experiences and how they feel society views them. So, hope you enjoy.
I saw someone eating like Cheetos on like online once with chopsticks, and it's so smart.
It's a clean way to do it.
Yeah, eat twisties with chopsticks. That's amazing. Sorry, I'm getting too many snacks, not enough chats.
All right. Well, what we usually do... Mm-hmm. Oh, everyone, this is Rose Matafeo, by the way.
Oh, my God, please. I'm sorry.
If you haven't
yeah, they
fucking...
They would have picked it up.
I think you might have figured that out by now, but in case you haven't...
Yeah, you know my hot takes on cheesels and twisties, of course.
There's only going to be one person.
Obviously.
Normally, the first question is, yes, when people ask you where you're from, what do you tell them?
I say that I'm from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm living in London at the moment, so that's usually why they ask. They're not like, where in Auckland are you from? I think it changes, I suppose, where you're asking. Because if I was in New Zealand, I'm like, I'm from New Zealand. They're like, I know. I'd say Auckland, mm-hmm, and then more specifically Ponsonby. Now it would be like a bougie thing to say, but I literally was born there when it was
crap. Like bougie.
Yeah.
So what was that like growing up in Ponsonby?
Great. We lived in a state house for way too long. my parents would actually, they lived around the area in a couple places and then eventually moved to a place in Hokanui Kres. And it was like a really crappy, tiny house, two bedroom, two older brothers, my parents, the coldest house you'll ever know. It was colder inside than out. It's hard to explain as well, especially when you move to England and where all of the houses, like the infrastructure is like, it's built for the cold. Mm. And Auckland houses, man, are just like...
Not built for that, eh?
I know, nobody, everyone thought, came here and was like, well, it's an island, so I guess we'll just build paper-thin wall bungalows.
Yeah.
And like, had the coldest winters. Mm. It's been a long time since I've been in bed, being fully clothed under duvets with heaters.
Yeah. It's like one of like the standout like memories for you as a kid. Yes. Just the winters.
The terrible winter where you could see your own breath. Oh my God, it's horrific. And like hot water bottles were like a proper, we'd have three. And my mum, she was like, you know what actually works better if you fill a milk. I fill up just a milk bottle with hot water because you know it's actually less to get through, like the plastic. I'm like, yeah, but you got burning plastic in your friggin' like bed, like you're crazy. It's like a step away from like putting coals in a pan in your bottom of your bed. But I remember just the house being really cold, but then really, like really good in the summer. It was such a nice house though.
Mm.
It was so nice, and like because I grew up in Ponsonby, but we were very. Like we were not a rich family, but then increasingly became surrounded by rich families. The schools I went to, I would always make friends with people who were way, way richer and just go over to their houses and be really nice to their nannies.
Yeah.
Be really nice to their nannies and they can be, get so much food. It was the best. It was so good. And the kids never liked me, but the nannies and mums did.
Oh, so how did you manage going to their homes if the kids didn't like
you? Because they needed to invite probably the only brown girl in their class.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Bayfield, which is a notoriously
white school.
White as school. I could count. There was Levi and there was Jared and then Lucy Motu.
That's fucked when you know that there's not that many brown kids when you know all of their names.
Hell no. Oh my God, Lucy Motu was Māori. Me and Levi were Samoan. Was Jared Samoan or Tonga? I don't know. Yeah, we literally knew all of them. It was embarrassing. All my brothers, you know.
Yeah.
It was very... It was very, very white.
Almost everything I read about you mentions the whole you've been doing this since you were 15.
Mm.
But I'm interested to know like how a 15-year-old comes up with the idea that they're just going to start being a stand-up comedian.
Well,
that's quite a strange thing.
It's strange and obnoxious, and I do want to say like it is obnoxious. Like it's the most like, oh God, did I wear a little vest as well? Or like, you know, like. What kind of nerd
did
was that? No, well, No, I did wear sweater vests.
I used to wear vests. I thought I was so cool.
I think they're coming back, actually. I think they're a very strong look. Basically, I did this workshop thing, which was put on by the Comedy Festival, which is called, like, Class Comedians, and it went out to all these, like, different high schools. And they do a comedy show at lunchtime. And then they'd be like, oh, anyone who wants to come to the comedy workshop after school, come to this comedy workshop. And I remember I went when I was 13, and you weren't allowed to do it until you were 15. So then they're like, oh, yeah, okay, come back when you're 15. And then 2 years later, I came back. hot on. I had a joke. I had written a joke. And I was like, I'm going to do the joke. I'm going to get in. Yeah, and from there, I did it. And I'm not one of those creeps who are like, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian when you're like 7 years old, yeah, like little Jerry Seinfeld guy. It's like, definitely didn't do that. But I loved drama and English and like media studies. And I was a control freak. As you know, a teenager, and I was like, well, this is an opportunity to do it all myself.
Oh my God.
Be in charge of all of it, you know. But no, I think it was just something that was like actually appealed to all of my interests. And then, yeah, basically just had fun doing this workshop. And then we did stand up at the end of that workshop in the holidays. And it went fine, and I got like some open spots on open mic nights. But I basically did it for fun. Like as a cool extracurricular activity, because I wasn't really sporty. Like I loved media studies, and we'd like make movies and stuff, like spare time and all of that. It was basically an after-school activity. It was like, oh, this is a fun thing. I can just like go into the comedy club and do some
Some cool jokes.
The more I talk about it, the more I realize I am the obnoxious teenager. So I'd be like, oh well, people want to hear about me. Great. And all of the stand-up was so funny because it was like, what do you talk about when you're 15, 16, because you have no life experience. So all my material was like, oh, remember Sesame Street, guys? What's up with that? And you're like, oh, God, okay. It's uncomfortable watching a girl with braces on stage at a comedy club. You're like, you shouldn't be here. And my mum was so cool. She would, like, drop me off and pick me up after gigs. I was like, don't come in.
I love that your mum, didn't go in.
No, she never went in. She was like, yeah, but she would just drop me off and pick me up. It was so funny. My parents were always like, we never ever did any extracurricular activities. Mostly because they were expensive. And like I remember I asked my mum, I was like, can I do ballet? And she was like, no. She was like, absolutely not. And she took me to the library.
It's against my beliefs.
She took me to the library and bought me a 50-cent book called Ballet and Dance, which had a lot of like,
moves.
It had moves. Like, it had breakdancing moves as well. And I was like, cool. She was like, well, you could do that. But then they've always been like those supportive parents who are like, they'll support you with whatever you want to do, but you have to kind of decide you want to do it and just begin doing it. So as soon as I started doing it, she's like, yeah, cool, great. And then was driving me to gigs and all of that. And and then I just kept on doing it out of just like didn't have anything else to do, really.
How was AGS for you? That's where you went, hey? Auckland Girls. Because you're growing up in this rich-ass neighbourhood with a bunch of rich white friends. And then you go to AGS, which maybe I'm wrong, but in my mind, AGS is like hard out. Islanders, right?
Yeah. My mum was adamant that I would always go to AGS. And I never really fought her on it. And I was really happy I didn't, because I remember I went there, a lot of girls, I went through like Ponson Intermediate, which is again, you know, a little bit less, you know, horrifically white, but it's still pretty like, it's in Ponson B, you know, it's the kind of certain type of people. Parents send their kids there and stuff. And AGS was amazing because it's like, South Auckland, which is like a lot of the students are from. But there was this thing, there's this kind of like, I don't know, soft spot for Auckland girls, I think, for being a place where you just send your daughter.
Yeah.
Especially when you're from South Auckland or you're from Central. And it was the best. It was like, I maintain it as the best school and I had the best time. And it was just such like a, it wasn't like a real big difference. Like, oh my God, where am I?
Oh my gosh, brown people.
Oh my God, brown people. Yeah. This is crazy. It was just like ultimately like a much more rich schooling experience than you could ever really have. And I think richer for the fact that it's all girls for me.
True.
Because I think all girls, I would never send my girl to a co-ed school for high school. Because I think it just meant that like I've got some of my oldest friends who like I developed in high school. I grew up with two older brothers, so like I had no sisters, and so it was like a chance to properly like forge friendships and relationships with other girls. And just that thing of like learning to support other girls. And I would have been a horn dog as a teen if I had boys at school.
Without having to worry.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. Like, I no one would have kissed me. Like, no one did. Like, no one did. Even when I ventured out to Western Springs, Springs boys wouldn't kiss me. But, and that's weird because my brothers went to Auckland boys and I went to Auckland girls. Mm. And even though they're supposed to be brothers, sisters, girls, they're very different schools.
Yeah, they're so different.
Very different.
Yeah.
The only difference is that I didn't even dream of auditioning for the Samoan group in Auckland girls. My brothers were the leaders of maybe 12 strong Samoan group from Auckland boys, and they're both half Samoan boys, and they were in it every year.
Number one.
And I was like, oh cool, I'll do that when I go to Auckland girls. And I was like, just went to, and saw the tryouts on the front lawn. I was like, oh my god.
I mean, even I went to Onehunga and we had a Samoan group and they were not that great, mm-hmm. but even I was like, I'm not trialing out for the Samoan group. I'm
going
to go to
daunting.
The Cook Islands group. Mm. Yeah, I think it's like, I think it's worse.
Cook Island groups were very inclusive as well.
Yeah.
They were the ones that actually let anyone audition.
The Cook Island group and the Indian group. Mm. If I didn't go for the Cook Island group, I was like, the Indian group looks fun. That
it
looks
does look fun. I was at that stage at Polyfest. It's a good one.
It's harder when you're Samoan, I reckon, mm-hmm. and you know that you're not that great.
Oh my god!
Samoan
being
shit.
You're like, going okay, to eggs? Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it's the worst.
Yeah,
I would going to. Do you feel like you experience this as well?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So this is how I think of it. When I'm around, I'm like around white people, I'm very Samoan.
Yeah.
And around Samoan people, I'm very white.
Completely.
That's how I feel.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like I am, and it was. I mean, my dad is the Samoan one, and he's never. It's a really interesting thing as well because I think there is a thing when you are half something and half something else, a lot of other people will be like, well, how much of that are you? And like, how much can you lay a claim to being that person without even actually knowing that, kind of realizing that it's so individual, those experiences. And that, like, my dad never spoke Samoan to us. He lived, like, lived on the, you know, street when he was like a teenager. Mm. He was this little urban Samoan boy who never, ever felt any, you know, affinity to his culture necessarily. Mm. And it's a funny thing where when you're not like necessarily exposed to that as a kid, and then you go to Auckland girls and you've got a Samoan last name and you're like, hello. And it's just like, hello. People are like, what? This is, okay. And I think, it's such a real interesting, hard line to toe because you don't want to be like this person who's like, not being authentic and trying hard, being a tryhard, trying to be like more of one thing. Like all my friends were white because I grew up like, you know, my close friends were. And it was just because, you know, I grew up where I grew up and what schools I went to. But yeah, it's just that really daunting feeling, eh? Of just being like, oh shit, I'm the worst Samoan ever. I couldn't even say I've only just started saying my last name right. I could not speak a word of it. But I think at Auckland Girls, I think it was never an issue. Like, it was just nice just to have people who had similar last names to you.
Yeah, right. So it was like even though it was daunting, it was also like a comfort for
you. Yeah. It was never, I think it was just never a thing. It was as good for me as it was for any of my friends who were like, you know, fully white, you know.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, you don't want to be in a, but like, it's just, there's just all different little bubbles and you just kind of go from bubble to bubble and to be in that environment of being like, there are more people. Like, it is, I think it's the most multicultural of like all, a lot of schools actually, Auckland girls. I stress so much about being half someone and just being like, I'm an absolute joke to my cousins. I'm an absolute joke to my cousins or anyone who's actually Samoan. I read this really interesting article about like being mixed and stuff and like, yeah, not being brown enough to be brown and not being white enough to be white. Mm. And like, it's just so funny, which like you're, or what privileges you're like afforded when you are half something and half something else. It's just such a confusing thing. It's just really confusing. But I think it's ultimately good. And I think everyone should have mixed race babies because it's the cutest.
Easier for all of us.
It's easier, guys. It's just easy.
And I guess like as your name has gotten bigger and stuff, you start becoming known as the Samoan comedian or whatever. So that must have also been...
What's funny is that I remember when I went on the Billy T and like it was the first time I found out from the Facebook page for like the Pacific cons, like the Samoan consulate. It was like first time ever won by a Pacific Islander, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But it's so funny because sometimes I feel like I'm only Polynesian when it is convenient for like
for Polys as well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it'll be like after running the Fred or something. It's just kind of like it was so funny when you're referred to as a Samoan comedian or like Polynesian comedian. You're like, oh yeah, okay, so it's when I win something.
Yeah.
Or like when it's something good and you post it on your like thing.
Wait till you fuck up as well, then you'll really be Samoan.
Exactly. I know. I can't wait. But then I'll never ever it's never referred to otherwise. And I just it's a really interesting thing where it's like, when does that become part of your identity, like important? Or you'd be like, oh yeah, cool, she's Samoan. But never like
never go to your show.
Never go to my shows. And like that's my fault. I mean, that's my fault for not like, you know, for doing the shows I do. But even my own cousin didn't go to my show. I saw it during the comedy festival. I couldn't believe this. On his Insta stories, he was like, ready for some cool comedy. And it was like, tickets to Freaking Dangerous Bro. And I was like, ah, oh, fucking hell. I was like, okay, fair, Freaking Dangerous Bro, great.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And they're like, ready for the next comedy. It was Nick Rado. And I was like, Nick Rado is Croatian. Like, I'm Croatian as well. But Nick is the... What are you... You didn't even see your own cousin over... Like, Nick Rado... Oh, my God. And he'll never listen to this, but... I mean, I'm furious about it, to be fair. But, yeah, I'm still thinking about that cousin, man. Can't
Don't
believe
let it go.
That.
Don't let it go.
I'm not going to let it go. Freaking Dangerous Bro is stealing my own family.
You were mentioning just before talking about this whole thing of women looking after each other or the girls looking after each other and that sort of thing. I feel like you're doing that with your TV show as well.
With Funny Girls, it's like I think it was basically made out of necessity to employ the crew of John and Ben out of season. And right. So it was kind of like, okay, fine, but let's make something good out of that. Yeah, so it's been a really good opportunity to like work up talent in that regard, because I think there's so many talented people that just don't get the opportunity sometimes to go and like learn, like, I guess, how to write and what the process is making a television show. I mean, to be fair, they're all people that I like know and my friends who are comedians and who I improvise with and stuff. But it's great to be in the position where you're allowed to go, okay, this person gets to do this because we want more girls doing it.
Mm.
And that's fine. And it's not going to be, people aren't going to be like, well, that's bullshit because that's just reverse discrimination. Like, no, this is the...
Where's the boys' TV show?
Oh, my God. And it's like, ah, oh, it's most of mainstream culture, mate. It's like...
Yeah.
But even the existence of that show, because it is a small group. It's a group of people who I know and I know I work well with and we've known each other for a while. We're not, you know, able to give all of the girls who do comedy opportunities. But I think even the fact that it exists shows the necessity for it to not be an anomaly, like for it not to be a weird thing. It's like the fact that a show that's mainly written by girls, who's mainly got girls in it, produced by girls or directed by women, that shouldn't be a story you should be writing that's amazing. Like, because that's not, and it's not, and it shouldn't be. Like, it should be the norm. And I think maybe it's just a step in that direction of it not becoming like a interesting thing about it, like
you want it to be less of the conversation, right?
Totally.
Yeah,
it should be just normal that there are more women directing shows and writing them, and you've got at least an equal mix of women writing a show as men, because that's like absurd if you don't. And I think a lot of people in New Zealand are like, well, there just aren't any women. It's like, no, I mean, you're crazy. Stop commenting on stuff articles, this kind of stuff. there are plenty of women who are great. And then I think the other argument is that, like, they're like, well, there's a smaller pool of people for there to be good and bad out of, which is also bullshit, because it's just not true. Because I think that women are held to such, especially in comedy, are held to such a higher like expectation to be good, or else they're failing their gender. When I mean, boys who start doing comedy and never have that weight on their shoulders.
Well, boys can be shit at a lot of things, and it's totally fine.
Yeah. No one's going well.
No one's like, well, fuck. All men.
Yeah. I was like, I think I said just before to someone, I was like, maybe we should just stop letting men do things. Like, I was talking about something terrible they'd written. I was like, we should just stop. Just a little ban on that.
Have a break.
Have a break from men's reckons.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? The world's fucked, man. Shit.
It is fucked, actually.
It's a problem.
I was listening to your podcast with Alice, Boners of the Heart, which I think is one of the best titles of a podcast and also has the best theme song.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It grooves the heart.
Yeah. There's a couple of things when you're like, I just have this feeling that in 5 years... there's something terrible is going to happen.
Guys, I mean, look, this may come from my dad, who is, he's the most doom and gloom, like, Illuminati believing, Alan Greenspan reading.
Bush calls 911.
Yeah. Bush calls, like, yeah. he's part of a Facebook group called What Guan, which is basically where they post conspiracy theories about
the
Illuminati. Basically, yeah. Okay, it's like stuff like that. And I'm like, cool.
I was like, cool, that's my dad.
Good to be
cool.
Yeah. And sometimes that conspiracy theorist comes out in me where I'm like, guys, are we just all going to, we're all just nothing, man. It's going to all end and it's fine. And, you know, the world's going to end and it's okay. Still have kids, it's fine. But, you know.
Your kids are probably going to be obliterated.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, I mean, to be honest, I would rather be born and obliterated than... then, you know, not born at all, possibly.
But how would you know?
That's so true. Well, we could be obliterated, actually, and I'll be fine with it. My friend, this is really amazing. She's such a cynic, and she's got very strong views on things. Hot takes, a lot of hot takes. Mm. And she was like, well, I remember we were in Italy, and we were walking around Rome, and she was like, you know, if I had a button, and I could press it, and it meant that every human in the world would just die, I'd do it. And I was like, oh, what? Wow. And I was like, we're in the beautiful Rome, like Rome evening. And I was like, oh my God, okay, why? It's just like, well, because the amount of human suffering that goes on in the world is not worth the amount of human enjoyment. And I think humans are inherently evil and we shouldn't exist. And I was like, okay.
Do you watch Naruto?
This no, my brothers do.
It's like essentially the whole premise of the
yeah.
show.
Yeah. That just humans are just trash.
Yeah, and that they shouldn't have their own, like, free thinking.
I mean, to a certain extent, I believe it.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, fuck, we suck, eh?
Absolutely.
We're so shit.
I can't wait till humans are extinct and hopefully. Like,
there's
hopefully,
something to
you
look
know,
forward to.
Yeah, hopefully, like, you know, there's no greater meaning. I suppose there is universe stuff going on, but, like, the universe is amazing. Humans aren't.
Mm.
And like the amount of suffering that goes into like figuring out why humans exist and why we're here and what we put on earth to do. It's like nothing, man. We're put on earth to chill. Like,
yeah, just start chilling.
Start chilling, man. Literally think about the best things in the world. And they're very like, you know, if you become like a master, like Eckhart Tolle, like really like buzzy guy who like has an epiphany about the universe or whatever, that's sweet.
Mm.
But ultimately, just have some nice food.
Mm.
Go to, you know, treat yourself to a nice hotel once.
Yeah.
And just enjoy your life.
Go to a stand-up comedy.
Enjoy your life.
Stand-up comedy, man. Mm. Continue to support the...
Support the arts.
Support the arts.
It's like, what's the point of anything?
I know. I know.
So why do you even...
I know. Why do you even do anything?
Why do you even do anything?
To have a good time, I suppose.
Especially comedy, which I imagine is probably one of the most stressful... anxiety-inducing careers you could probably choose for yourself.
Possibly. I think, though, it's actually the same amount of stress I think you would have in a normal job, but it's just the bouts of stress and the time between
right, it's
them.
Right, it's all concentrated,
yeah.
Whereas in 9 to 5,
totally. Your
it's
amount
more
of
like boring stress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's
yeah.
just petered
it's
out.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Completely. It's way more. Because I think that's why that stress is such a... like, our bodies have not caught up to the idea of like stress that is created by like on a 9 to 5 job isn't something that our bodies can like deal with because we've never been put into that position where it's like stress was something where it's like, oh my God, I've got to run away from a frigging dinosaur or some shit. Obviously not a dinosaur, but but like, you know, but those were stress things. And so when it's spread out over a long amount of time, you cannot keep that up. So maybe stand up is a kind of good one because your whole day is condensed into you got to do this thing for 1 hour a day, and it's amazing like how much that takes out of you. Like doing Edinburgh when I just had to be one place for 1 hour every night at 9:45, and it kind of it ruins your whole day because you know,
knowing that you have to go to that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I had to make myself a rule. I couldn't think about the show before 6 p.m. and that's like nearly four hours before my show. Mm. But at 6 p.m. I'd have to start going, okay, cool. Where are my things? What am I going to do? I'm going to have a nap. And it was just all this kind of risk control, risk assessment of like, how am I going to do this thing for 1 hour? It's hard.
But then that's depressing because that means that none of us enjoy our lives from Monday to Friday.
Hell yeah.
And that's why we binge drink.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I mean,
because if you can't enjoy your day because you know that you have to go to work that night, that's literally, that must be everyone else, right? Mm. We can't enjoy our day.
But that's why I respect those kind of weird people you meet in your life who are just doing things their own way, or they're like, they live in the desert or some crap, and they just like live a simple life, or like but they're happy and you're like, why are you happy? Like, why are you happy living like this boring ass life? And then you realize it's just because they've just figured it out earlier than anyone else what makes them happy and how they can actually like survive doing that. Comedy is certainly not a sustainable career. Like, it's, I would hate to think I would be like doing stand-up when I'm like 50.
You would have gotten an Oscar by then.
I really have to. And you know what? I've got grand ambitions far beyond the reach of my talents. But genuinely winning an Oscar, I'm like, well, I will go to the Oscars one day. I've just got to keep doing stuff that's better than other stuff. I don't know. I've got to do stuff that's better than other stuff. I think that comes from like, I think I've had a really like very, very kind, very blessed career up until like, it's sometimes I'm like, oh shit, that's amazing, like I'm doing comedy full time as a job. And that's what people, like, people dream of, and it's like, I'm so lucky to have had the opportunities and stuff, and I feel a bit proud in that. I'm like, oh, I earn money doing this, and then I very quickly turn into freak out of going, holy shit.
Then you're like,
what am I gonna do next?
Like,
what am I gonna do
this? Yeah.
It's all good for now. I mean, I'll crash and burn at some point. Or I'll become an accountant.
Do you see TV as that's your future?
Yeah, I think so. Well, hopefully. I love TV. I've always loved TV, making TV.
Mm.
And just being part of TV.
I miss you live.
I miss you live. So, like, it's taken me a long time to really realise how great that was. It was like, it legitimately will never, ever happen again.
No, and the fun thing, I was just thinking about that today. I'm like, if it was still going now, it would be fucking huge. Mm. Because of the way it came out when, I guess, people weren't like, oh, social media is big.
Totally.
But it was totally utilising Facebook and all that shit.
The whole thing was like second, like, yeah, well, but okay. Essentially, I mean, I've heard it from people who have like moved on from TVNZ now. They've just gone, like, years after they shut us down, they were like, yeah, we just need something like TVNZ.
And you're like, fuck you.
You did it. You made it. You absolute arsehole. And it was real, like, it was a flawed channel. And, like, it was, like, it had so much potential because it was so cheap to make. I mean, they didn't pay us
so much. So much talent has come out of that as well. Like, literally almost every comedian I know has come from that.
Come through that show. Yeah. And, like, everyone's doing amazing things, amazing different things who did, like, who presented on it. I learned how to produce on that show as well. And it uses the same technology that, you know, like really big churches or like concerts used to make. But we made the show with that and it was so bizarre. And I was just remembering how many tech fuck-ups we'd have. We had to press one button to go to the break. And remember, sometimes when you first start learning how to produce, you press the button. And if you don't count your breaks right, you end the show. And you're like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. And then it's like the great, and you're like ringing MCR, being like, guys, we ended the show. I'm so sorry. Can we still come back to us? And it was so unattended. So, like, by the end of the show, we were talking shit about the CEO, like on the show,
live.
Yeah, and that shows how they were not watching because they literally didn't have any. Like, we were just getting away with so much.
You were
shit.
Never called into the office.
Oh my god,
like,
I definitely swore a lot of the times. My mum would text me and she was like, "Did you just say fuck on there?" And I was like, "No, I don't think so." She's like, "I think you did." And I'm like, "Oh well, no one's gonna complain because it's just stoners or after school." Yeah, I miss it so bad. It was had such potential, but I'm so glad I did it. It was the best. It was if you could put more money behind a thing like that, but keep the cool lo-fi-ish vibes of it. Mm. It was like radio on TV. But yeah, it was such a, I look back on it with such fondness now. I was like, damn, that was really cool.
You're based in London, right? Mm-hmm. You're based in London now.
Yeah. London's
are
good.
Are you feeling successful in London?
I'm feeling very lucky because, again, like I literally, when I first moved there, I did this like TV show run through thing, like a fake one that, of a show that didn't get made. And the person there was is now my manager because she just saw me and she was like, okay. Do you want to get signed? And I was like, oh, okay. I was very like, oh, it's like getting off the bus in Hollywood being like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So oh, just got Hollywood producer. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's been going good. I mean, so I can do stand-up way more. Auckland, there's a lot of comedians, too many comedians for the gigs, I think, the amount of gigs True. That happen. So I can do a lot more gigs and I'm more confident in doing that stuff. London's the biggest city. They're like going to see comedy more. I think in New Zealand, people are still very much like, well, it doesn't make sense. Stand-up. New Zealand comedy is a torture. It's an oxymoron. which is the most common stuff comment you will get on any article about New Zealand comedy, which is a really disappointing mentality when you realize how many funny people come out of New Zealand. I don't know whether or not that antagonism towards it makes comedians better. Or,
maybe.
You know?
Maybe
that's the secret.
But I think
funny
maybe.
We'll ride Flight of the Conchords dick for like 10 years or something when they're not even doing. I'm not dissing them at all.
No.
Yeah.
I mean,
like we'll be like, Flight of the Conchords, Kiwi.
We're very fortunate to have people who are like they're most popular New Zealand comedians and then being actually good.
Yeah.
And then so it's quite a proud thing, right? But then it is the case where it's like you were watching them in pop comedy in the back of the day and you were probably calling them shit. They know that as well. No one gave them TV shows. They had to go to Edinburgh, go to HBO. And I think it's such a classic, like meet a high school bully 10 years later and they're like, hey man, cool, what's going on? And they're like, fuck you bully me, you beat me up. And so the case in New Zealand. But yeah, I think there's less of that cultural cringe in London and in England. I think people are more like, yeah, great, cool, doing comedy. Great, I'd love to see you. Have a laugh. And here it's like, I can't even believe you want to make a joke.
Yeah. You think you're funny?
Exactly.
It's like that Mean Girls when she's like, oh, you think you're pretty?
Yes.
It's like,
so you agree.
You think you're funny.
Yeah, exactly. It is so that. But no, it's going good and I'm being able to blag my way into doing like some writing stuff, being like, because I did Funny Girls and being able to go, hey, nobody's making sketch over there. So it's kind of interesting. They're like, they really like love the stuff. And if people left New Zealand and went somewhere, people would succeed because they're, you know, making genuinely great stuff. And I'm just lucky because I'm up there and doing some stuff. It's interesting. I when you come from New Zealand, it's this weird thing of like not ever imagining your life, the rest of your life, not being in eventually being in New Zealand.
And I imagine it's hard to, when you left, you were making money, right?
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, my God. I've spent all my savings.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like, it's just hard. It's not your dream to go over there and get a 9-to-5 while 100%. You try and chase that dream. That's not how it's going to go for you, right? So, yeah.
And that is the thing that happens so much is that, like, you get a 9-to-5 job and you don't have time with the energy to do comedy.
Yeah.
Like you want to do. So I was lucky enough. Like, basically, I just was like, oh, I'm just going to spend my savings to try and just do it for a certain amount of time. And then if I can live, like, I have no savings whatsoever now. It's basically just earning enough to, like, live as a lady of leisure and do comedy for another 6 months in another country or whatever. But I think that's absolutely fine to do. I feel fine doing it now. I think in New Zealand, you just go, you get caught in that thing of going, well, I should buy a house and get married and, you know, and do stuff like that, which I think is great. But I never had the money to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say the good thing is no one can buy a house
anymore.
Just fucking leave.
I know. Yeah. It's weird, eh? I don't even know. Sometimes I'm like, maybe it'll be fine if I didn't come back to New Zealand. I don't know. I think family is just a hard thing when the reality of going, oh shit, I wouldn't be around like to be an auntie or something, you know?
Yeah.
Is a gutting feeling.
I read one of the most Kiwi sentences I thought I would ever read reading your Guardian interview.
Oh my God.
I was like, I think I definitely probably have a moderate amount of talent.
Oh my God. I know. It was because
I was just like, that's so perfect though. If you're to sum up the mindset of a nation almost.
Hell yeah.
That is it.
It completely is it. Because it actually, and that definitely wasn't thought out, that sentence.
No, yeah.
But it really shows the different process of like, so like, yeah, cool. Like it's going up, definitely. Probably. So like, wait, but not, no, no, yeah, yeah, yeah. Not to say that I know anything. Probably, maybe. Like I have a moderate, so definitely undercut it. Definitely undercut whatever it is. I'm going to chat. Like it was because he was putting me into the position where he was like, like to give yourself a compliment and like big yourself up. And I physically, my friend describes it sometimes like putting salt on a slug. Like, you know, like you're like just shrivel up and die. And you're like, you cannot ask that of me. Like, you can, I will bring shame upon my people. Yeah. It's such a sucky thing, eh? But I'm guilty of being a person who brings people down for that. Like, of going, oh, you think you're, oh, you think you're like, be modest, man, be humble.
Be humble is be our humble. Favorite thing. And it's our favorite compliment, right?
Totally.
We're like, oh,
very
yeah,
humble.
I met Rose, she's humble.
Very
she's
humble.
She's humble, humble, G. And that's like the biggest compliment you could ever pay someone.
I mean,
it's great to be humble.
But it's so funny, yeah, because it's absolutely like, I think there's a really good aspect of that. I think being aspirational isn't the opposite of being humble, like, or trying to achieve something. But it's almost like having that mouth where you talk more shit than you actually do, and I hate that. I hate when I see people, and it's a real American vibe, eh?
Yeah.
Like you see, and it's you see it work for people, like they talk enough stuff about them that people start believing it, and you're like, no,
you're like, this is weird, like where's, there's no evidence, you
absolutely
know?
Like, no evidence, like they've just talked themselves up to a degree. So I think I agree with that sentiment of it, but I think especially with comedy, I think people get offended with the very idea that you would want to do do it as a career, which I think gets into the area of like kind of meddling into other people's vibes. It's like, if it makes that person happy, then like, or like, you know, if people want to listen to it, then just, you know, it's fine.
Is that a very Kiwi thing, that the idea of being a comedian offends us?
Or the idea that we think that we're good and like we're even possible to.
Yeah.
It's just a bizarre thing. I think maybe it comes from the idea that we're a very small country as well, and the idea that there would be people who would appeal, like niche things, you know, genres of music or like, you know, types of comedy that would appeal to not everyone, or isn't broad. That's the offensive thing. Like, I think a lot of people think that comedy is like this homogenous thing where it's a weird thing. It's not, your music isn't treated like that. Like no one's like, what kind of music? Well, I like all music. It's like, no, you don't like all music. But a lot of people go, what kind of comedy do you like? And they're like, you know, good comedy. And you're like, no, you know, what do you mean? You know, that is not a thing. Like, comedy is a genre. It's a medium like music. Mm. And it's so, so different. And I think it's still treated in New Zealand as like, if you don't appeal to bloody middle New Zealand farmer, then it's not comedy. And it's like, well, no, it's just, you've got to open up what you think it is. That's fine. We'll keep arguing with Brian from, you know, Dunedin, who has a lot of things to say on the stuff, comments about funny girls or something like that. Yeah.
When you write your comedies or your stand-up, do you think about the impact you're going to have on people, like, after the show? When you've said all your jokes, which are also rooted, I assume, in some type of real life experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
Are you like, people are going to listen to this and maybe go home and that's the point,
stuff.
Right? I guess you're wanting to make people think about shit.
No, I think it's different. Like, I think, you know, you could be a certain comic who's just observational and it's just, you know, it's comedy is almost like, you know, it could exist in a vacuum. Like, you could read it out and it would be funny. Like, it's as funny on the page as it is read out. But like, mine is very, like, I'm very into the performance of it, I guess. But I've never had that because, like, I don't usually do stuff that's about me. But then I've just only recently started doing stuff that's kind of rooted in, like, actual experiences or whatever. For this last show, I talk a lot about the pill and going off the pill. And it's been very, very, very funny. It's a new world where girls come up to me and they're like, I know what you're talking about, man. Like, I was like, man, I was on some fucked up shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm off it now, man. I'm on the thing. And it's so funny because it speaks to specifically, you know, a lot of girls. So I like it. It's so cool because when I'm talking very, very honestly about my experiences, it's the best feeling in the world is to have other people be like, I totally know what you're talking about. And like, message you, be like, oh, I went through exactly the same thing. And one girl, she was like, 13. She was with her parents and she was like, yeah, it was really interesting to hear about all that stuff because, you know. And I was like, no, go on the pill. I was like, go on the pill. I'm sorry, Mel, I'm sorry. No, don't get pregnant. But, yeah, and so I don't think I actively go, because I think it's hard to write comedy when you're like, yeah, I'm going to do this message and stuff because it's hard to make this funny. But I think when you happen upon something that, like, speaks to people, it's like sick. It's just like observational comedy though. Like when you watch Jerry Seinfeld and you're like, classic. Yeah. I know what you're talking about, man. What is up? I know. Yeah. But then I think with the stuff I do sometimes it's just more skewed towards women. And I think that's some like a real big gap sometimes and well not sometimes all the time and stand up where it's like when you're specifically speaking to women. And I love doing jokes where only girls get the punchline and you hear girls laugh and you don't hear the boys because they don't get it. And I'm like, ha-ha, it's like speaking a different language. And that, I tell you, is the common experience all the time for girls.
Yeah, yeah.
But all the time when you watch, you know, I love all action films. I love Fast and the Furious. But, you know, that isn't made with me in mind. Like, you know, like, not necessarily.
Mm.
Not necessarily.
I was asking specifically with the pill in mind
mm-hmm.
because... You know Catherine, eh?
Of course.
And I'm fine saying this because she's already written about it.
Right.
She, like, totally went off the pill after watching your show.
Oh, after my show? Yeah. Oh, my God.
She was like,
and she's like,
she was like, oh, my gosh. This,
like,
am
the
I,
real me.
Yeah. She was like, have I not been the real me for all these years?
She was exactly the same.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Is that I think it's so different because sometimes the pill's, like, awesome for girls. And
for me.
But, yeah, exactly. And it's like... But that's the thing is like I think the expectation totally kind of errs on the side of that's expected that you have to do it. And when it doesn't work for you, you're like, oh shit, well, I guess I'll just stay on it. And I'm like,
have a shit time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I think I've got so many friends who it's so good for and I'm like, damn, that's awesome. Congrats, man.
Happy for you. I'm real
happy for you, man. Happy for you. But it's just the idea that the being not on it isn't an option to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Bloody love the pill. But it turned me into, I think I remember I just had to go off it for a while. And like, I remember just being like, damn, I feel like I'm seeing color. Like, it's so weird. And even though it was like, it was never got terrible, but it was just like, again, to that control thing, I hate having another variable in the mix to not know what is me and what is something else. And I want complete control over that. If I'm going to be crazy, I want to know I am being crazy. As opposed to anything else going on. I went off the pill originally to go try and get an IUD. That was a whole different story. Didn't get it in the end.
Oh, why not? Oh, I guess that's probably too...
No. I talked about it on stage. Messed up. They told me to come at the wrong time. And they were like, oh, we don't know if we can put it in, but we're just going to measure, you know, up there. Like, see, we could probably do it. And they're like, they use a stick and... whenever I say that, everyone's like, just what? Weird stick. Yeah.
Just a stick from the stick. Tree.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, but it was a plastic stick and they try and measure your cervix. And they're like, okay, when your cervix is stimulated, you might feel a bit like ill, a bit nauseous. I'm like, cool, that's all good. And then I start feeling that and I'm like, okay, this is bad, but you know, whatever, it'll be over soon. And then they kept on pushing. And then she hit a point where I was like, it felt like someone had, I'd opened surgery and someone had put their finger. I was like,
insert.
I was like, well, I don't, and I was like, it's the most pain I've felt. And I've never felt that exists inside. In my body.
Yeah.
You know how you don't feel organs because that would be mental.
Yeah.
And you go crazy. Like, that's the reason. And it was like, oh my God. And I was like, take that out. And she was like, okay, cool. So I can't really put it in because I don't know whether or not I just then hit the end of your cervix or the top of your uterus. And I was like, okay.
Maybe another time.
And I was like, okay, cool. So I just went through all of the actual pain of putting an IUD in for no IUD and for you to tell me that I've got maybe a small uterus. And I was like, fucking hell. But then I remember doing stand-up as a joke of that. And my joke was always that, like, I've always been tall and I've never been petite in any way. So in a way, I was like, cute. Like, yeah, I got a little tiny, tiny uterus. That's so sweet. I love it. So it's hard. Different stories for different folks. Great.
Cool.
Great.
I don't know.
Is that snacks and chats?
I feel like the uterus story is a
good ending.
Good way to end. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to eat twisties.
What do you reckon? Twisties.
Should we get into
crispy.
Snack?
Oh, hey, man, you made it to the end. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Snacks and Chats. If you liked it, tell your friends about it. Rate us and say nice things about us on iTunes, please. Tune in next time. Thank you.